Hi, this is Kashish. Welcome to a new episode of Business Odyssey.
Hi, I'm Lakshmi, based out in Bangalore, India.
Hello, I'm Laura, curious by nature. I am based in Argentina. Today, we are lucky to have Jeanette Brunet join us. She is a renowned global keynote and two-time TED speaker, cultural strategist, and the author of The Self-Care Mindset. During our conversation, Jeanette emphasized the significance of we and about when it comes to self-care, mental health, well-being, and psychological safety. She talks about the challenges and learnings that come with focusing on this aspect of personal and professional life, and how they impact the business world, specifically the organizational culture. Jeanette advocates for a human-centric approach that prioritizes the well-being of individuals. Happy learning. Hello, Jeanette. Hello, Lakshmi. It's a pleasure to have you here in a new episode. Jeanette, you are more than welcome to introduce yourself. I believe you will be better than us in that time. So.
Thank you. Thank you for having me and having an important conversation about how we change culture and the impact of self-care that it has on how we engage with each other in our daily workplaces. I'm a, you know, author, keynote speaker, and culture strategist who's really focused on what it is that's going wrong in the workplace and what we can do about it so that we can stop just surviving work and start actually thriving at work, which I think we deserve. I think work is there to grow us and build us up. And I am born in Denmark, and so I grew up in a well-being culture. So I have this perspective that I think is a little different than people might normally think of. And it's very much of a we perspective. So when I think about rethinking self-care in the workplace, I don't think of it as much about self. I think of it more as we, and how do we care better together? So that's really my focus in the world and in my work. And right now I'm situated, I'm in New York and upstate New York right now, but otherwise out of New York City and in the U.S. And I've been in the U.S. since 89. So it's been a long time.
Yes, definitely. Okay. Thank you for sharing that. So and my first question goes to self-care and a culture of care. So what is all that? I mean, what is all that about? What that's involved, the impact, has to understand where are we when it comes to this topic?
Yeah, I think we often think of self-care as something we do after work to recover. And sure, self-care is partly something we do in our own time, but we will never support ourselves in being at our best, whatever that looks like at any given moment, if we don't think of self-care as something we do all the time, meaning a mindset that we have with us all the time. So, you know, there's so many versions of self-care, and it's a bit of a paradox, right? Because self-care to me means that we are supporting ourselves all day long so that we have regenerative energy, so that instead of using up whatever energy we have and then collapsing at night and just trying to recover, really looking at how do we spend our energy and our attention and our focus and our presence all day long so that we engage with work and we engage with each other in a way that, I don't know, like is most productive, most collaborative, where we learn to listen to ourselves and each other in a way that says, well, how do we want to solve this problem? And so I think self-care is really misunderstood as this treat and this, you know, time off and time alone and, you know, vacation. Or people call me and they're like, I'm taking a self-care day. I was like, that's good. That's good that you recognize you need to recover. But the point is that we don't wear ourselves out to the point where we need a self-care day to recover, but rather look at how do I support myself throughout the day. And a lot of that is actually our mindset. It's how we think. So in the back of our mind is running, thoughts are running, right? That's what mindfulness and paying attention is all about. Like our thoughts are just taking over. And how can we become a little bit more present to what it is that is there so that it doesn't drain us? Because the way the mind works is it will focus on the problem before it focuses on the possibility. And so there's a good chance that the way we work and the way we think and the way we engage all day long is focused on, oh my God, I have so much to do. Oh my God, I don't know how to get it done. Oh my God, I don't think I'm able. Oh my gosh, I don't know. Like whatever our mindset is saying about what's not possible. And it's really draining. And if we can pause for just a moment, I call it power pausing, and just recognize, wait, where am I right now? What are my thoughts doing? How can I shift my attention to what's possible? How do I achieve what I need to achieve? And what do I need so I can do that? And that's what I believe is more regenerative mindset of self-care, is this shift to, okay, to get this done, what do I need so I can do that? And that has an impact on how we work together as well. And we can talk a little bit more about that, but I'll pause for a moment and just say, yeah, I think we can all recognize that if we're stressed, there's a ripple effect of stress.
Mm-hmm. So one way of understanding this is also that it's an habit that we can't build and we can maintain and we can improve in our day-to-day life. Yes. It doesn't matter if it's personal life or professional life.
Exactly.
That's correct.
Yeah. I think this idea that we can pause a little bit instead of just reacting based on stress, which is our normal human behavior, right? We react based on stress. It's part of our survival mechanism, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. We need that from time to time. We need that when a child is running out in front of a bus. We just need to react. We don't need to pause and think about how to best respond. Just go do it, right? Save the kid, you know? And so we need these responses. We need them. But if the response in the workplace becomes a flare-up of anger, emotion, irritability, impatience, because we feel we're not capable of getting something done, then we're creating a more toxic work environment. And I think we can all relate to this because we all do it. The point is not to shame that. The point is to become aware of it so that we can change it.
Mm-hmm. So how we connect these, I mean, the habit, to create the habit and just to see the impact on the long term or the benefits in the long term. The impacts I'm referring just to every aspect of the human being, because we are humans. So in that sense, it will have an impact on a social life, on a personal life, on a work life, and so on.
Yeah.
So how do we see that in the long term, the impact?
In terms of relationships, right? I think if we stop for a moment and look at everything is actually relationship-based. We have a relationship with ourselves. We have a relationship with each other. We have a relationship with work. We have a relationship with nature. We have a relationship with time off, which is all the relationship is all about how do we feel and think about something, right? And so if our relationship with work is that it's overwhelming, it's wearing me out, I'm not doing enough, I'm not capable enough. If that's our relationship with work, is that work is sort of working against us, it will really wear us out. And we will be very much in that defensive mode. If our relationship with work is, well, work is for me to learn and grow and be curious about what's possible, engage with the people around me, and they're not here to bother me, we're here to solve problems together, right? If we can shift into a mindset that says, oh, I'm curious about what's possible, then work becomes a place that grows us up. not breaks us down. And so our relationship with work might come from our family. It might come from society. It might come from the workplace, in the sense that somebody might go into a workplace and say, oh my God, I'm so excited. They really care about me here. They really want me to succeed. And then the leader might be a very aggressive, negative, critical person who keeps catching people and doing something wrong instead of saying, that's not working, but what do you need so that you can do this instead? Like, if a leader can just ask a better question, all of a sudden we're building people up and we show them that we care about them. But if we're constantly telling people what they're not doing, we're breaking them down. And then people go home and then their relationship with work is, I don't want to go back. I don't want to go back on Monday. I don't want to be there. Because we constantly see our own capabilities as not good enough. And so I think these are some things that we don't really normally talk about a lot. We talk about, hey, performance and doing our thing. And we all want to look good and shine and we're capable and we're all these things. But inside, we might be really struggling and we can't see that. And I think that's part of the power of mental health in the workplace too, is to really support people in saying, what do you need so that you can get this done? What do you need so you can work better? What do you need so that you can manage this workload? What do you need so that you can figure out the priorities of this overwhelm, instead of just saying, you figure it out? Even somebody who says to somebody, hey, you figure it out, I trust you. That's actually not very helpful. Because basically what we're saying is, I don't want to be involved in your problem. You figure it out. I trust you can do it. But in the meantime, that person might be struggling inside and saying, I don't actually know how to do it, but I'm going to work till midnight to figure it out. And that's not healthy. And so our relationship with work, our relationship with others, our relationship with ourselves, do we think of ourselves as valuable within the context of work? Or do we think of ourselves as just a piece of the puzzle and nobody really cares if I get my work done, other than it's done on time? But nobody really cares if I have a good idea. I don't really matter. Like, and so there's a lot of this going on at work where I think we need to change culture, which I call a culture of care, where people feel cared about because we ask them questions. We pause for a moment and we ask them, what do you need so you can get this done? It sounds really simple, but it's not that easy. And so the long-term effect on that is that people feel they have agency. People feel they start having a positive relationship with themselves, with the people they work with their peers, with their leaders, and therefore with work. And now we get a positive culture. We get a growth culture. We get a culture where people actually want to engage in work because they matter. They feel they matter. They feel they're valued. And then they value themselves too. And that's how we then start setting constructive boundaries, positive boundaries that says, listen, I can't get that done for this deadline, but if you can give me 2 more days, I can get it done. Like a culture where we can speak up in that way. And like, there's so much possibility here. And it comes down to the relationships, how we really take care of the way we engage with each other, the way we communicate and collaborate completely changes. And that's the ripple effect of well-being instead of the ripple effect of stress.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so how we can connect is like, if you have to say that in an easy way or in an easy phrase, how do we connect the self-care with well-being and also with psychological safety when people feel safe?
Yeah.
How do we make that connection between the three of them?
Right. Well, self-care is a mindset that continuously says, how do I support myself in my well-being, right? So self-care mindset runs in the background and it continuously wants us to succeed, right? Instead of beating ourselves up, we continuously have that self-awareness that says, okay, I'm not feeling great right now about this. What do I need so I can feel better? What do I need so I can feel more confident? What do I need so I can have more courage? What do I need so that I can get this done on time? Right? That's the mindset where we want to support ourselves and we shift our attention with that power pause that says, because that's in my book, like, how do we power pause? What, how does that power pause helps us come back home for a moment, exhale, calm down our nervous system, and then just check in and say, how am I feeling in there? How am I thinking? What's going on? That's the self-care. Then that supports our well-being, which allows us to cultivate more regenerative energy, be more engaged, be more present, be more emotionally available, because we're more emotionally aware and we're taking care of what we need and we ask for what we need. So we're creating more of that well-being both in ourselves and therefore also encourage others to have that relationship with themselves. Because I think we all know that if somebody feels good, we're all wanting to know what they're doing so that they have that energy and that presence. And, you know, hey, what do you do? Well, I just went and had some water because I was feeling tired, right? Did you drink water today? Like, it's sometimes it's just the basic, simple stuff. We need to demystify this a little bit. Maybe it's just a 5-minute walk to shake off a problem. And then well-being starts becoming the way we engage with each other, becomes the foundation for how we work together. So if we're all having, and so that's why when I was mentioning in the beginning, I come from a well-being culture where we think of health for everyone being a human right. Not a human struggle, not something that it's our own responsibility, but something that is the foundation. It's seen as the foundation that we all have access to being healthy. We have access to food. We have access to certain things, right? And so if the company thinks of themselves as a place of well-being, then we're promoting a culture where people not only feel they matter, we're promoting a culture where there's more productivity, because the logic is that if we feel better, we work better. But the numbers, the studies show that too. If we need studies instead of logic to prove it, you know. But yeah. I think before COVID, we were like, well, what's the ROI on well-being? And I was like, well, logic says that if you are not exhausted, you will solve problems better. You probably know that from yourself. But if you need a study, here's a study now. But, you know, but since COVID, I haven't really been asked for the ROI on well-being, because people like, you know, we know that poor health can break a company. Now we know that. Mm-hmm. We don't need a study for that. We have a real life case study. If people are not healthy, people don't work, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let me, if you want to ask, I have a question, but please go ahead.
Yeah. So, Janet, what do you think? Okay. So, I'm curious, you're coming from Denmark. Is that the motivating factor, that you're coming from that country? Where it is, you know, respected, this health piece is respected to a great extent. Was that one of the motivating factors for you to get into this, Janet, or were there any other things out there which you might have experienced and you're right now in this on this wonderful path, which is in its own self, you know, great, right? So what was that, your journey, in other words, right? Your transformative journey, maybe that could inspire Laura, me, and even the audience for that matter.
Well, you know, when I first came to the US at 26 years old, I had already burned out, but that was because I was young. I didn't respect that I actually needed sleep, right? I thought I could just use my body and drink coffee and I'll be fine, right? And so I pretty fast learned that that's not how it works. You do actually need sleep, food, water, things like that. You know, I was just running on empty because I loved my job. I loved it. I was so excited. And so who needs sleep, you know? And then it became a pattern of mine to just work so hard and do that. The thing is that coming from a well-being culture, it wasn't expected of me to work long hours. It was my choice. And so when I came to the US, so I realized that my choice was my own ambition. And I kind of put it on myself to work harder and more because I was excited. I loved my job. But it was also my youth, right? I was 25, 26 years old. I was managing, I had 50 people working for me. I was excelling. I was, you know, I saw myself as this this person who was like, you know, ambitious and growing. And I had a good time. I had a great rapport with the people that worked for me. I was curious about how to support them in growing. I saw them grow. I saw them take action and own their job. So I was really excited about being this kind of a leader. And I also realized that my youth and my ignorance didn't think that, you know, the basic core foundation of the most essential human needs are necessary, right? And so after I came to the States and I had worked through my burnout and so on and so forth as well, and came here and looking for a job, coming into the workplace here, not only was I really shocked and traumatized by some events that happened, one being that the man I had fallen in love with, married and moved to the US with, met someone else within a few months of moving here together. So my world fell apart. But also I couldn't get a job within the level that I had expected in terms of, I was a young leader, you know, I was coming to America to continue my growth and my ambition. And so all of that was, I can see now, like the ignorance of the youth, and but also the excitement. And I think it's important that we, when we have a young workforce, like we talk about Gen Z and things like that coming into the workforce, I think it's important that we honor the excitement and help them balance the ignorance, if you know what I mean, right? We don't know what we don't know yet. And I don't mean it ignorance in the judging way. I mean it just in the experience way, right? And so I was really distressed. I was depressed. And I started looking to learn more about me and growing myself and understanding myself. So I started studying Buddhism. I started studying mindfulness. I started studying different philosophies. And it taught me a lot about self. And it taught me a lot about understanding myself, self-awareness, self-responsibility. It taught me a lot about both listening to myself, but also having compassion and acknowledging myself. And I realized how our mind is not always our friend. And I kind of knew that because my mother was struggling with bipolar disorder for my entire, pretty much since teenage years that I realized it, and up through my adult life, my mother was struggling with bipolar disorder. My father was a very sort of mindset kind of person. He was like, you can do whatever you put your mind to and so on and so forth, which was probably why I had some of this excitement of youth and excitement, maybe of ignorance. And I can do whatever I want to do kind of attitude. And yet here was my mother who constantly saw what was not working. And my dad constantly saw what's possible. And I was there in between the two. So I kind of learned by experience. And then when I studied mindfulness and Buddhism and kind of understanding how the mind works, I started understanding that. I started understanding this relationship much better, which is a big part of what's also the tools in my book. All is kind of life studies of my own, plus practical studies throughout my work years. But I saw this, how focusing on what's not working is one of our human sort of defaults, not defects, defaults, right? We focus on what's not working because we're scared. And that's back to the psychological safety, Laura. We are working under stress. That means we're scared, right? And so to create more of that psychological safety, we need to help people see yes, and instead of ignoring feeling scared, which we tend to do, we're like, don't worry about it. It's like, okay, now I'm not worried anymore. Thank you for that. You know, that's not good advice. But helping people say, oh, I understand you're really worried about, and what can you do about it? Right? So now we acknowledge the problem and people's fear, and we say, and what can you do about it? So I was sort of this person between my parents that had to shift my mother's attention over. I kind of had to be like, yes, mom, and what can we do about it? Right. And so I was this little teenager who was like, you know, trying to get her in a good mood. And I remember when I was a little girl, so my mother was probably struggling far earlier than I realized, because when I was a little girl, I remember that the only thing I wanted in the whole wide world was to make my mother happy. And you can argue that that is still why I do the work that I do today, is because, well, I couldn't make my mother happy, but at least maybe I can help other people find some more peace and joy and happiness in their lives, because we can learn how to work with our own mind in such a way that we can shift from what's not working, getting stuck in the depression and stress, to what do I need so I can make it work? And that's that shift and the power pause. It's the self-care mindset tools that I teach in my book. And also throughout then my years, I was in the fashion industry and I was buried by stress and overwhelm. I forgot about my own tools. I forgot about everything I learned because I got sucked into this culture that said you are worthless unless you produce work. Right? That was the culture. And that was especially the culture in the fashion industry. Your time is not your own. You don't matter unless you produce results. And we'll just get someone else if you don't show up. Right? That was the attitude. And it's extremely damaging to our confidence and to our humanity and to our sense of self. And so after both my parents died of cancer a year apart, and to be honest, my company fired me after my mother died because now I had to take care of my dad. So I probably didn't have time to do what they needed me to do at work, which I can agree with because they basically expected me to be available 24/7. So it was a really destructive and toxic work environment. Granted, we can also argue that wasn't legal that they did that and they had another excuse, but I found out through the grapevine that that was why. So I realized that I needed to do something else. I needed to not be in the fashion industry anymore. And I wanted to help people be healthy and busy at the same time, because that's what I needed. And I also wanted something else. I wanted us to not end our lives with regret. Because I had been sitting with my father. My mother died suddenly. And my dad died slowly. You can argue. We knew for about a year that there was nothing more they could do for his cancer. After my mother died, we knew there was nothing more we could do for him. And for 5 months, he was bedridden and I was his caregiver. And we had so many conversations about success and work and relationships and what matters and the relationships at work that he had cultivated. And he got all these letters from people writing him and said, "You had a conversation with me where you cared about me and you asked me what matters to me. And it changed the trajectory of my life." And he had no clue. And these were CEOs and executives from different huge companies in Denmark that he had engaged with as he was an executive search consultant. And I saw the impact he had on people. And one day when I was running around all stressed and angry about so much work I had to do to be his caregiver and so on and so forth. And I had started my own company during that time too. So I was navigating my own new business. And he said two things. One is, he said, "Why are you so angry with me?" And I said, "Oh my God, I'm not angry with you. I'm angry with the situation." And I realized how often people don't know that we're not angry with them. We're angry that we can't handle it, right? That's one thing that I learned. And so it's important that we communicate how we feel. And the other thing I learned was, he said, "I don't need you to take care of me. I don't need you to dust and vacuum. I need you to come here and sit down and hold my hand and talk to me, because I want you to know that you care about me." And I learned that there's a really big difference between caring for people and caring about people. Caring for people doesn't mean they feel they matter or they're important. Caring about them is a conversation. And that is why I do the work I do today, because work is a place where we need to show that we care about people. We need a culture where everyone matters. And it's a conversation. It's about saying to people, "What do you need so you could get your job done in a way that you feel proud of?"
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing this. I mean, heart-touching, at least for me, I would say, Janet. Thank you so much for sharing this.
And I can very well relate to whatever you're sharing. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. This is so inspirational. And yeah, it does. It touched my heart.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. You know, I think it touches the very thing that we forget every single day when we're so busy doing our work, is that we're still human, and our humanity is actually what makes us special. Our humanity is actually what makes us thrive. It is what makes companies thrive together. We're all there to be human together, and we all want to be successful. We all want to be acknowledged and do good work. And so a company's responsibility isn't to provide for us, it's to create an environment where we can do good work, you know. And that is also about, that's what I was saying in the beginning, is that I don't think self-care is so much about me, me, me. It's about we. Because it is the cause and effect of relationships and how we all connect and communicate and collaborate together that really makes a difference in the workplace. And that is harnessing that power of we, the power of care. Because when we care about something together, you see it all the time, right? We see people rise up together to, you know, either call out something they think is not working or ask for something they need. And that's the power of we. When we care about something together, we create change. You know? Yeah.
I have no words. It's like very hard touching. So, and I am also like very sensible, I will say. So I appreciate a lot for sharing that journey, your experience, your personal experience. And I don't know how to move forward with our conversation. It's like, it's something like this is very unique. So I really appreciate that. So thank you very much for that. And I don't know how to move. I don't know how to continue. It's like, I don't want to do that kind of break. Okay, let's move without making that kind of reflection. I agree with you in it's about we, and it's about the other person. Just,
yeah,
that's the word. It's about, that includes the we when we work with people. Because as you said at the very beginning, is we are based in relationships. So, and we are talking about other people. So if we are referring particularly to the workplace, so how can we do better as people, as team, as leaders, and as organization as well? So yes, it's kind of my reflection based on what you say already. So, okay. Ask me if you want to add something else. I don't know.
The story, and before that, you know, all of that sees it, I would say, in a very beautiful way, Janet. So mindset, right, Janet? It's something. So we have this, we always talk about this nurture versus nature debate, right? That's mm-hmm. always out there. Mm-hmm. So what do you think, what does that have to play in terms of the self-care that we are talking, you know, the humanity part, the we part that we are talking, number one. And second is, do you think it all again begins with that leadership buy-in and everything that everybody talk about, right? Like, leaders buy in into things, then change happens, transformation happens, and all of that. But what about that self-care thing and all when it comes to leaders? Like in all your experience journey, have you seen leaders embracing this aspect, or it has been a lot of, you know, a lot of push, or how was it? Have they embraced it gracefully, or there was a lot of homework to be done at maybe at your end, or in terms of helping them realize this humanity aspect, this caring aspect and all? So yeah, two questions, pretty long maybe I have talked, but yeah, your guidance, your thoughts would be wonderful.
Yeah. Well, number one, I think a lot of leaders don't think of themselves as role modeling a self-care mindset. That's number one. And I think they want it for their people. And they don't think that they either need it or have space to take better care of themselves. They just need to solve the next problem. And I think that's part of the illusion and the lies that has been created around self-care, because it's always portrayed as time off. And that's part of what we need to not only demystify but also challenge, because we think of self-care as time off. No surprise we think that we can't afford it, right? And I want to say two things about that. Yes, we need time off. Okay, we need time off. But time off isn't fixing burnout, because we don't stop worrying just because we're not at work. If we care about it, we'll worry about it. And so leaders tend to go home, take time off, and still worry. So it's not the time off that we need to change. As I said, we do need more time off. We are working too much and too hard. And studies do show that when we are not exhausted, we solve problems better. So we do need time off so we can get our sleep. But again, the problem with not getting our sleep isn't that we're exhausted. It's that we still worry, right? We're not falling asleep at night because our mind is still going. And so we need to go a little bit behind the obvious symptom and get a little bit more down to the root cause of the problem, which is we need tools to work with worry. And that's the key here, right? We need the tools to work with worry so that we can focus on what we care about. And that allows us, like, if you think about what you care about, your whole body opens up, your heart opens up, right? There's power in that. You're like, yeah, this is what I care about. And you're like, whoo. But if you're like thinking about what you worry about, you're like, oh yeah, you're like, oh, the whole system becomes smaller, right? It feels like the heart shrinks and the mind starts going like this, right? And so can we come back home into saying, okay, this is what I care about. This is what really matters. And leaders worry so much because they care so much. So I don't want to boo-boo worry and stress. I also don't want to make it easy to get past it and just be like, that's all in your mind, because that's not fair either. Stress is not a badge of honor, and it's not a defect either, right? It doesn't mean that we don't have it together, and it doesn't mean that we're better than others because we have more stress than others. And so these are a lot of these things that are happening in our culture, which are shifting and changing, right? We have different generations. New generations are coming in that says, I don't believe in stress. I don't want to work if it means I'm having to be stressed and worried all the time. That's the Gen Z. They're coming in to say that, right? The millennials, they are born with worry, right? They're all worried. I don't think I've met many millennials who are not really feeling the impact of stress and pressure in their lives. They're also part of the sandwich generation of taking care of children and taking care of elderly parents, right? And so they have a lot to worry about because they care. So I think we need to have a little bit more open discussions and really say, well, what is self-care really? It isn't time off. It's about having a better relationship with our mind and getting some tools to work with worry and stress, and really using mindfulness to help harness and manage our attention. Because when we're trying to solve 10 problems, we're still only able to solve one at a time. And so the self-care mindset helps us prioritize and cut through all that overwhelm, because it's basically a simple way of asking questions. Because the way we ask questions direct our attention. If I ask you, what did you have for breakfast today? You will automatically start thinking about that, even if it has nothing to do with our conversation. But right now, your mind is already thinking about that. And you're having a hard time thinking about something else that I'm actually talking about. So that is the power of questions. It hijacks our attention. And so all day long, we ask questions. And most of the time, we're using our mind to ask questions about what's not working. That is why we wear out. And that is why we worry so much. And so can we use that? I call it the FUD, the fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And in my book, I spend a lot of time talking about FUD and how we can acknowledge the FUD, use that as information, and then shift our attention with some of the tools I share in the book, the power pause and asking better questions. Shift our attention onto, okay, how can I reclaim agency? And why does it matter? So now we're taking energy from what we care about. And now it becomes more powerful because we're not reacting based on fear of what might happen. We're acting based on care about what we want to make happen. And so that shift is effort. And it's a very practical tool. It doesn't just happen because we want it to happen, but it doesn't actually take time. It gives us time back. Because we're losing so much time focusing on what's not working. And so that's why I say that the self-care mindset isn't about taking time out. It's about cutting through all the noise so that we can get to why it matters, figuring out what we need so that we can get there. And that is actually a shorter path to achieving results and to collaborating better together. And so I don't know if I really answered your question. Both of them, but I think I did, because that's what that idea of self-care really is how do we do it for ourselves and how do we use it in the way we work with other people by asking them better questions? It doesn't take more time. It isn't about taking time out. Yes, you might need to go get some food. Yes, you might need to go get some water. Yes, you might need to go stretch, go to the bathroom, go for a walk. But that doesn't actually take time out either, because that gives you time back too. Because now you can pay attention again. If we think we can work back to back to back to back to back, we're wrong. Our maximum attention is 45 to 90 minutes at a time. After that, we're not listening anymore. And when we're not listening, and when we're off asking other questions in our mind, we're not actually here. And we're just wasting time. And there's a lot of meetings where people aren't there, even if they're on the screen. And so giving some pause and space and grace between meetings is a really simple way to reclaim our attention. And getting the nervous system to calm down, right? There are studies that show that if we're just going back to back to back to back to back, stress builds in our mind and our nervous system. And eventually we're just not able to cope anymore. We just numb out. We just don't listen. And so, you know, we don't actually, it's not really about convincing people to take time out. It's about teaching them how to use their very own resources to their optimal capacity. And that is about the nature. That is understanding the nature of how we function optimally as human beings and really understanding human drive and human behavior and understanding neuroscience, understanding motivation. That's the nature of what really, truly we are as human beings, because we're really amazing. We're really, really powerful. We're actually really incredible. But we don't think so. Most of us think that we're a problem to solve. We're not. Being human is an advantage to harness. And that's the nature part. The nourish part is how do we harness that amazingness that we are? And we do that by the very simple stuff, food, water, rest, pause. And then the next level, which is relationships. That's part of our nourish. Relationships, how do we foster better relationships by actually listening to each other, by having a, you know, care-driven relationship culture. And then how do we succeed, which is the growth mindset? How do we nourish people in that curiosity factor, in that accessing their growth mindset? And doing that, that's nourish as well. And those are the three layers to growth that we are all thriving for. So that's how nature and nourish meets each other. It's not really about more time off and luxury and self-care days. No, it's about really understanding how to support ourselves in the very thing that makes us amazing. And that is our ability to be adaptable and agile and grow. That's really our amazing possibility as human beings. And it's part of our nature. We're just not accessing it because we're buried under stress and worry and being told that we're not doing enough. Instead of being told, let's do more of this because that's what you're good at.
Thank you. Thank you again, Janet. And then you answered both my questions. So, yes.
You're very welcome.
You mentioned in some steps of your book. So my last question is for you. What are those other steps that completes the journey and let the journey continue to improve themselves?
Yeah. So the power pause is essential. It's the start of all change. It's the start of all awareness. It's the start of everything we need to do. And just learning to power pause, I have heard from many people that even just power pausing has made them more productive and reclaiming their focus and attention in the workplace. And they feel more capable and happy. And that alone is a big change. Then there's the self-care mindset, which is the framework of the four questions of care: self-communication, self-awareness, self-responsibility, and self-expression. And that care framework I go through in great detail in the book because it's how we engage with ourselves, but it also becomes a tool in how we engage with each other. And then the last part of the book is in three parts: how we think, how we engage, and how we act. And so the last part of the book is how do we act with more discernment and confidence? And that's the triple A tool that I talk about, is how do we use this awareness that we have claimed with the power pause? How do we acknowledge how we feel? Because that's a really big part of it, is that we acknowledge how we feel instead of pushing it away. That was what I was talking about before, is that we tend to think that resilience is to ignore the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, the FUD, when it really is to use it as information so that we know how to tackle something. And then the most important tool in that last part of how do we act with more discernment and courage and confidence is to accept the circumstances for what it is. Without accepting the circumstances for what it is, we cannot jump into action because we're still solving the wrong problem. So for example, when my dad was dying, we knew he was dying. And we could talk about how unfair it was that he was 66 years old. My mother was 64. That was way too young. And we could talk about that for 5 months, how unfair that was. Or we could accept the fact that he was dying, which we did. After we talked about how sad it was, of course, and we acknowledged our loss and sadness, and I acknowledged my fear about losing him as well. But once we had done that, we could start saying, okay, what do we need to make today a day that matters, a day that I can remember and that makes him able to leave feeling more complete? Now we had accepted the circumstances for what it was. And we could keep asking, so what do we need today so that we can make this a good day? And that's the power of acceptance, even when it's really hard to do sometimes. And it still brings tears to my eyes to think about it. But it was powerful and beautiful and important. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Janet, for this. It's like... Wow, the wow experience in that sense, at a very personal level. So, yes, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. That's the power of care.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Indeed. To close this amazing episode, I want to ask you, I mean, if you want to put it this way, the learnings, you already shared twice of your learnings. If you want to share one or more too, or the what do you see that is important, that is also important to consider when we're talking about self-care, for the audience, I mean, to consider.
Yeah, I think self-care is about being inclusive in creating a workplace where we are looking at our humanity being what drives a better culture, drives good work, and drives a sense of happiness at work. And we're not doing this alone. We don't self-care alone. We self-care together. Because part of our self-care is our relationship with other people, and is a very important part of our self-care. It's a very important part of our human thriving, is our relationship with each other.
Okay. Thank you very much. Lashmi, do you want to ask something else?
No. This is so fulfilling. Fulfilling in every single page. Considering that, you know, like Laura knows it to an extent, but since last week, it has been really stressful at my end. A lot many things have been happening, and listening to your experiences and what you're sharing, you know, it's like, it is, in a way, it is motivating me, you know, right in the moment, at this point in time, and my mind is literally thinking, what can I do better? How can I get going? So thank you. Yeah. That's why I earlier said that I can relate to this so much. So
Yeah. I don't think we're going to get rid of stress. But once we accept that life is stressful because we care, then maybe we can figure out a way to work with it in a way that doesn't break us down, but builds us up instead. So, as I always say, may the pause be with you.
Yeah, I cannot do it. It's like very difficult for me, but yes.
May the pause be with you.
I love it.
Thank you. Thank you for your care and attention to this important topic.
So, thank you so much. Final question, where people can reach you?
Well, you can find me anywhere under Jeanette Bonnet, because my website is jeannettebonnet.com. On social media, I'm under jeannettebonnet.com, but under Jeanette Bonnet, LinkedIn, Jeanette Bonnet. And my book, The Self-Care Mindset, is, well, depending on where you are in the world, but it is also as an ebook. And then, of course, you can buy it online at places like Barnes & Noble and Amazon. Or local bookstores will be able to order it for you. So, great. Depending on where you would like to buy your books. Yeah.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to have you. Lashmi, as always, the co-host of this podcast. So,
yeah.
Enjoy your rest of the day. Lashmi, your evening. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, bye-bye. Jenna. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks to everyone who makes these podcasts possible. In particular, thanks to the guest speakers and to you who are on the other side listening. If you liked it and were able to learn something new today, we invite you to share it with your entire network. We also invite you to subscribe to our different channels to follow our latest news. If you are interested in being part of these series, you can apply by clicking on the link that is in the general presentation of the podcast. Until next time.